ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
To make something better, we need to add, don't we?
Nobody says, oh, Steve Jobs couldn't think of another button to put on the iPhone. It's like this was intentional. This was, you know, what they were trying to do.
Unless you think like a product designer, your need to accumulate and add without questioning might have crept up on you.
If all you do for the rest of your life is say, I'm not allowed to add anything in unless I take something away, you'll be a better person.
Atlassian futurist Dom Price is going to give us a coaching session later, which aligns with the theme of this episode. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for this working life, how to subtract.
My name is Leidy Klotz. I'm a professor of engineering and architecture at the University of Virginia.
You might think it's a bit weird that we're talking to an engineering and architecture expert on a work program. Well, Leidy wrote a book called Subtract a few years back, and since then, the concept has taken off in the work realm too. Get ready to rethink your to-do list. Subtraction had been fascinating Leidy for a long time, but it was a moment with his three-year-old son that helped him understand it.
Here we had this Lego bridge that we were playing with, and basically the problem that we had was that one of the columns of the bridge was shorter than the other column, right? And so I went to solve this problem like a good parent and using my engineering background, right? I said, okay, I'm going to like add a block to the shorter column. So I turned around behind me to grab a block. By the time I had turned back around, my three-year-old had removed a block from the longer column. And in that moment, it was very, you know, I went through the process that we've since showed most people go through when they're trying to make something better, right? So in that case, the thing that we were trying to make better was the Lego bridge. And my first thought was, okay, what can I add to improve this bridge, right?
Yeah.
And if I didn't have a three-year-old there with me, I would have added and moved on without even considering this whole other class of option.
So you got really excited. You ran outside the home and you started testing it on all your friends and your colleagues. What did they do?
Yeah. So I took it to my friend, Gabe Adams, and she's a behavioral scientist and a friend. We had met at orientation at the University of Virginia. We had both moved here from other institutions. And I'd been trying to convince her to work on things together because I'm like, well, I'm interested in design and you're interested in decision making. And nothing was really working, right? I mean, she's like, yeah, that's a cool idea. But you could tell she wasn't ready to spend some of her, you know, very valuable time on it. So I took this to her. I took the Lego bridge to her and I gave it to her. And she's super smart. So I thought she would think about taking away. Plus, I thought I had been talking about these ideas to her the whole time, right? I thought I had been. But anyway, I give her the bridge. She adds like everybody else. And then I explained to her what I was testing. And she's like, oh, I get it. Like, that's so what you're interested in is why don't we take away to make things better. Mm-hmm. And then from there we were off. She was bought in. She's like, oh, that's a really interesting question. And that hasn't been studied yet. And that's very basic research.
And then you started playing around with this idea of itineraries. What did you do with that research?
And so we gave people this ridiculous one-day travel itinerary for Washington, D.C. And it was big things like visit the Washington Monument, go to the Smithsonian, right? You could spend 3 days at the Smithsonian. So there are 12 of these things on this drag and drop interface, right? And you've got this pre-populated daily schedule between 10 in the morning and 8 at night. You're going to do all of these things, including drive between them and eat at a 5-star bistro. And we gave people the itinerary and said, well, how would you make this better? And like more people added stuff, like dragged additional activities onto that itinerary than took away.
And so are you feeling anti-adding? Does adding necessarily make things worse rather than better in your opinion, Leidy?
No. Thanks for allowing me to clarify because if I had to choose one or the other, I would choose adding probably, right? But the point is that we don't, right? These are complementary approaches to making change, right? The same way that adding can take a situation that you're presented with and make it better, subtracting can take a situation that you're presented with and make it better. And it would be really great if we could, you know, consider both of those in all of those instances.
If subtracting can make things better, why is it so hard to get people to do it?
You can be competent by subtracting, right? When you subtract, you are actually effectively interacting with the world. The problem is you can't display competence sometimes by subtracting.
That's right. Yeah. I would say that seems to be one of the core things that might get in the way, is that when I add something, I've got something to show you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when I'm subtracting, I just look like I'm maybe even doing less.
Right.
And so I can really see why naturally, particularly in the work context, why there is this natural inclination just to add something else on. But then what happens when we're just adding and adding and adding, Lydie? There seems to be something that happens to us all.
The more you add, the more busy you become, right? The more overwhelmed you become. And the more overwhelmed you become, the more likely you are to add things, right? And this is actually something that we studied. One of the reasons that we studied it is because we wanted to identify a heuristic. One of the ways to do that is to put people under cognitive load, right? So just to make them feel like they're mentally stressed. And then the theory is that you rely even more on the heuristic when that happens. So we gave people some of these subtracting tasks and had them do it on a computer. And every time a five scrolled by on the bottom of the screen, they would press an F on their keyboard, right? And then they're also trying to solve the problem. So they're a little distracted. When they were more distracted, more likely to rely on adding. So that was really helpful for our experiment. But what it means when we go into the real world, right, is that like the very time that you need subtracting most, when you're busy, when you're overwhelmed, is, you know, that's the time that you're even less likely to think about it. So it can become this cycle where we just keep adding and adding and adding and adding and become less and less likely to think about subtracting.
So you mentioned to-do lists. Let's just go to that deeper level on to-do lists. So what is happening there when it comes to adding and what we do with to-do lists?
When we're doing the to-do list, we're getting that feeling of competence, that little bit of competence every time we check something off on the to-do list. Of course, one of the ways that you can keep this more in balance, if you think about your to-do list, everything on it is probably additive, right? This is a thing you have to do. It's never a subtraction. So if you can think about when you're doing your to-do list, maybe have a stop doing list or things to stop doing list, and force yourself to come up with things that, okay, I've got all these new things I'm going to do. What are the things that I'm taking off my plate to make space for that? And, you know, it's very obvious when you say it, but it's also a way to kind of keep this whole thing in balance, because, you know, what we're seeing is that we're adding more than we're subtracting, we're getting overwhelmed. And the research shows that we don't necessarily just think about subtraction instinctively, right? So if you can give yourself this rule of having a stop doing list, that can be really helpful.
But what if your to-do list keeps growing because your manager keeps adding to it?
You know, as a boss, or, you know, as somebody who's worked somewhere for a long time, that value can be added by taking away. How do you help new people, or how do you help other people show value by doing that, right? So maybe it's a stop doing list for yourself, and maybe it's, you know, asking about it in annual reviews in the workforce, right? Or, you know, one of my people I really admire, she's a vice president at Capital One, and she just does it kind of informally, and she like makes sure to ask people like, hey, what can I help take off your plate for you to get this really important thing done? And she's not asking it as a stick, right? She like really wants to know, what can I help you take off your plate? And, you know, I think that kind of thing spreads throughout a culture.
Lydie says subtracting and learning to say no are not the same thing. His colleague Ben tried it out using a no bell. Get it?
It's a corny academic joke, right? So the no bell worked that whenever Ben said no to something, he would ring the bell. And he's like, you know, it's great. It's a way to celebrate saying no. It's a reminder that saying no is an option. All good. But you know, saying no to something isn't really a subtraction from your workload. You just didn't add to it. So I do think there's a distinction between between saying no to something and actually taking something away that you're actually doing. I think both are very positive positive things to do, but there is a small distinction.
I guess one of the little tips and tricks was to put all the things you said no to in your calendar, but maybe shadowed or a different color so that you can feel like you subtracted something.
So Ben's partner, Sophie, is also a work colleague and friend, and she actually does this. So she's like, she puts, when she says no to something, she makes it visible. So if she says no, okay, I can't, like, I'm sorry, I can't go to that committee meeting for 2 hours on a Monday. She puts on her calendar, like, said no to committee meeting or got rid of committee meeting. And then when she's doing something higher value during that time, it's a reminder that this time is brought to her by her previous subtraction.
Ooh, I'm going to try this myself. We're learning more about how to subtract at work with Professor Lydie Klotz from the University of Virginia. Lydie goes into workplaces to help them learn how to subtract. So what does that actually look like?
The key is to not just think about specific subtractions. It's really easy to get hung up on, like, hey, this is a meeting that everybody's annoyed by. And that's great. It's great if, you know, that my talk results in one meeting being subtracted, but I think that's the tip of the iceberg, right? And so force people to think about not just individual subtractions, but how do we build subtraction into the process? Well, I got to talk in Dubai, and they have a zero bureaucracy initiative. And they also are trying to take their government processes and make them all digital, right? And one of the reasons they had me come talk is because they were like, well, this is an opportunity to question the processes, right? We can't just digitize the same things if, you know, this is a really great time to question, hey, do we actually need to do the thing? And so I think that that's a really good example of, like, trying to keep the system in balance so that when you speed it up with the technology, then you're not making your life miserable, I guess.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of an organization where they've successfully subtracted something?
I heard, I think this was SAP that has the tool free, but basically, okay, here's a day where you're just kind of analog. And it's great. I mean, I think what that does, if in my view anyway, is it, of course, you're going to spend that day and be like, man, I wish I had X and Y. Maybe it's email and my cell phone or something. But you're also going to realize that there are 10 other things that you don't wish that you had, right? So it forces you to kind of question all these things that have been added to your plate, all these tools, and whether they're actually helpful. So I think that's really neat. And it's also a reminder that it doesn't have to be permanent, right? So often we think about piloting something, right? Well, like, hey, we'll try it, and if it doesn't work, that's no problem. We can just stop. You can also just stop doing something, and if it creates a problem, you can start it back up again, right? So this notion of a reverse pilot, I think, is really neat. But for some reason, we don't necessarily kind of think about that the same way as a pilot, right?
Another tip you can use to implement subtraction at work is to try the one in, two out rule.
If you're going to suggest a new policy or regulation, you also have to suggest two that we should at least discuss getting rid of, right? So it's brilliant. It's just the way to keep the system in balance, right? And it kind of works on this competence idea, right? Where, you know, we're trying to show off by adding the new thing, and it forces that person to also come with the things that should be taken away. And again, it's not that you have to do it. You just have to discuss it. We're going to talk about these things. It also works really nicely on this kind of showing that adding and subtracting are both ways to improve a situation. So that you can imagine using that in a, you know, in government, but you could also imagine using it in your workplace, right? So, hey, look, I work in a department, right? And basically the work gets split up among 10 to 15 people. And if we do something new, we should be asking, like, well, what are we going to stop doing to be able to do this new thing?
And Lydie, when you're working with organizations and trying to help them change that culture to look more at subtraction, what helps? Like, is there an idea of somebody who's in charge of subtraction?
There are. I have people send me these emails of, or like the links to articles of, you know, subtractor in chief or chief subtraction officer. So, I mean, it can't, probably can't hurt. I think it's like any change in an organization though, right? It's, you know, some combination of positions, but also kind of the culture. But it strikes me as the organizations that have like dare to simplify as one of the four core tenets. I mean, that seems really powerful to me. And I find it hard to believe that people working in that organization wouldn't then feel more empowered to take away. Again, like Dubai has this zero bureaucracy initiative, and, you know, whatever you think of bureaucracy, it's pretty clear that like taking it away is valued there. And they even have like a big incentive for the best subtraction at the end of the year. And again, it's not so much like giving those people this incentive. It's just people knowing that this is valued within the organization.
Lydie says the most important thing you can do if you want to implement subtraction at work is this.
I think like framing it as a positive, right? Like this is one of the problems is that it's seen as like this negative thing, and it's not. It's just another way to make change. And that's why like dare to simplify, or, you know, if you can make it as a fun thing or something that is seen as ambitious or creative, just kind of changing the valence around it a little bit.
Thanks so much, Lydie.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. This was awesome.
Professor Lydie Klotz is the author of Subtract, The Untapped Science of Less. Now, it's time for that coaching tip I promised. It uses subtraction and will help with your stop doing list. Atlassian futurist Don Price swears by an exercise called the 5 L's. You start by making a list under each of these categories. What have I loved? What have I longed for? What have I loathed? And what have I learned? That's 4 of the L's and one more to come. I'll let Dom explain.
It's me stopping, looking back 90 days at me as a leader, very inwardly focused. It's the mirror. And I ask myself 5 questions about me as a leader. Question number 1, in the last 90 days, what have I loved? Not like. Life is too short for like. The thing I've done is probably my superpower. When I do it, my shoulders lift, it gives me mojo, I'm good at it, it's valued, I like doing it, I should probably do a little bit more of it. So the next 2 L's are an equation. What have I longed for? What have I loathed? Everyone's like, oh, I've got a long for. We've all had a to-do list for ages, we never get around to it because we're full. So you're like, cool, you can't do the longed for because you're full until you remove the loathed. And you're like, oh. And the loathed isn't hate, it's the thing that doesn't add a dividend anymore. It used to. It used to work. It worked in 2001. It worked in 2011. Maybe it worked in 2020, but the world's changed, so I'm going to stop doing it. And it's the art form of subtraction. You remove it, give yourself the space, the time, the freedom. You can then try the longed for. When you try the longed for, little asterisk, you're going to be crap at it. Because as a 46-year-old man, when I try things I'm not good at and haven't done before, I'm not good at them. So I have to give myself the patience, right? The trust, the acceptance, I'm not going to be great first time. The 4th L is, what did I learn? What hack did I run on myself in the last 90 days? And if I didn't, that's a problem, right? I should be hacking at me and how I work.
So a good reminder as well.
Yeah, otherwise I've become the anchor, right? So what am I experimenting? Where am I exploring? What am I trying about me, right? Not reading a self-help book. It's not knowledge acquisition. It's action.
The 5th L is laughter, which Dom says is not about fun. It's about being playful. Here's what happened when he tried it.
And actually the first time I added that 5th L, I didn't have an answer for laughter. And I remember sitting there, and I was like, oh, God, I think for longer. I thought for a bit longer. And then I rang a friend and I was like, what does it mean if I haven't got an answer for laughter? And that's when Ben was like, it means you're leading through fear. And I was like, yeah, no, I probably am right now. In the mode I was in at that point in time with what was going on in my life, I'm like, I am. I don't like that realization, but it's true. So I need to deal with that because that all that's giving me is compliance and that's not healthy.
What did you change?
Instead of making statements, I started asking questions. That was a huge one. And then I wrote on a post-it note, instead of being furious, try and be curious. I was angry at the time. I was angry with people, and that anger was coming out in every meeting. Consider them starting the meeting by going, tell me more about what's going on. How can I help? I'd start the meeting by thinking, I will take you down.
How am I going to tell you how you didn't do this?
Yeah.
Right.
And so that was on me. That was my mindset at the time. And some of it was externalities. There's a whole lot of reasons why. None of them good enough. They're all excuses. But that was within my control to change.
The first time he did this exercise, Dom was on a plane and it made him cry. Here's why.
I was angry, really angry, because the things I wrote down were so bloody obvious. And I was angry because I wasn't doing well at the time. And I'm like, you're meant to be smart. Like, what's your problem? And after a bit of like analysis paralysis and a few more wines and a bit of reflection, you're like, these things were so close that they were comfortable. I couldn't see them. Then I was angry. Why didn't anyone tell me? They were all there. I'm like, I'm surrounded by, you're meant to be my friend. Why didn't you tell me? Like, why did it take me to do a reflection exercise to see something that I loathe that I can get rid of? Why did no one tell me that that wasn't valuable anymore? So I went through all the blame first. Then I went through the it can't be this simple. Then I went through the rationalization of just picking really easy actions to take so that it felt good, right? So I got the adrenaline kick, but nothing actually changed because I was just playing the game. And then I sat down and was like, no, this is a waste of time. I created a dance. I created theatre. I'm like, scrap the theatre. This needs to be brutally honest. And so the second time I ran it, and every time since, I have at least two friends that I share my results with to hold me accountable for taking action.
I feel like it does involve another person just in case there's some blind spots.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is if you are a leader with a formal title, often it's hard for the team members to actually give you that feedback.
Yeah, yeah. There's not the safety there, right? So yeah, and that's what it's weird. I've done this, God, thousands of times now. I've yet to see someone either write something down or be told something, whether it was a surprise. So this is the weird thing. Like when you do it, you're like, yeah, it's kind of obvious. Yeah. Yeah, no, I expected that. And you're like, so therefore the question is, what's stopping you? Like if that's a known and you have that knowledge, what's stopping you from actioning it? And that's the bit where you get the goodness, which is what's really at stake for you to experiment with this? And the answer normally is ego. Like there's nothing, it's not death, there's no heart surgery, you're not going to kill someone on your watch, so therefore give it a try, give it a red hot go, and if something goes wrong, you can add stuff back in, but we're running businesses that aren't saving lives, most of us.
And Dom, I don't know if you can remember back, but was there one thing after you did the merry dance around, was there one thing that you did change as a result of doing this exercise?
I change something every single quarter. I have to be more laser focused now. Me and my now wife, we've been married for 2 months, spoke through this exercise the other week in bed before we went to sleep. Like, we've been married for 2 months. What are you loving about it? Like, yeah, and a whole lot of things have changed. We had family over at the time. So these are things we loved and this is the thing that we loathe and the kids and life. And so we're doing it as like a personal reflection exercise, which is dangerous, but I've been doing it for 7 years now. So it's a little bit easier, but just as a framework of going, how do we bounce stuff out? I can't add stuff in unless I take something away. That's the, like, forget the five L's. If all you do for the rest of your life is say, I'm not allowed to add anything in unless I take something away, you'll be a better person. That's all the intention of the exercises.
Thanks to Atlassian futurist Dom Price for sharing his experience and running through that coaching tip, the five L's exercise. We'll put a link to it in our show notes. Give it a try. Let us know what you'd subtract from your to-do list as a result. You can comment on my LinkedIn post about subtraction, or you can send an email to thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. On our next episode, what's the status of workplace bullying? We deep dive into the latest research on how to actually prevent bullying with surprising results. It's not a case of bad apples.
If a workplace is really serious about addressing workplace bullying, then we talk about needing organisational buy-in. So that means that everybody is committed to the elimination of workplace bullying. And one of the main ways that we commit people to the elimination of workplace bullying is by making it a KPI of senior leaders, of the people in culture team, of line managers, the people who have the power at law and practically within organisations to make change and to implement the measures that are necessary for workplace bullying.
And we'll give you some ideas on how to stop it happening at your workplace. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and mixed by Elise Simons on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naar, Melbourne. Until next time, work it like a charm. Thanks again, Frank.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.